Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, September 5th, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I am Mike Sempervivi, and joined again this week by the returning legendary Les Thatcher. And Les, how are you this evening?
I'm pretty good, Mike. I just noticed they don't mention the host or the co-host names on the opening anymore. Does that mean we have to take a cut in pay or anything?
Is it possible for us to take more of a cut and pay?
Well, if we get any deeper in the, we'll be paying to be on this show, right? Is that?
You know, I feel as though sometimes I pay for it every week when we're done. But
well, you realize the Giants are playing the Cowboys tonight. The results of the semifinals of America's Got Talent are on, and you and I are talking about. I'm not sure what the hell we're talking about. You might call it wrestling, but then again, you might not. I don't know.
So we're not talking about, you know, after your absence last week with Mr. Mike Mooneyham filling in. We'd like to thank him for that, and everyone should go over to the Post and Courier and check out his stuff, new stuff up there almost every single Sunday. But after that week off, you don't want to come over and give me a great big hug?
No. That was two weeks ago anyway, Mike. You're a week off. We didn't do a show. There wasn't a show last week. If there was, I was told there wasn't a show anyway.
This is true.
Yeah. I came back from sunny California with, you know, with all ready to do a show, and I said, nope, no show. And I thought, well, okay, if that's the way it's going to be. Whatever. Can it be possible to get more childish, sophomoric, silly, and call it, well, they don't call it professional wrestling, so I guess it really doesn't matter what they do. I know Cisco and Ebert and everybody else said there's a few good matches on Monday night, but overall, and they critique the anger management segments and you know, which is great. I think they should change the name of their show to Entertainment Tonight. The crazy thing is there might have been a couple good matches, but most of that was overshadowed by silliness. I mean, it really was. And that, it makes it, the deal is this, and what I'm getting at here, I guess, is, you know, two guys can go out there and have one hell of a match. But with everything else that goes on in that 3 hours, it almost renders that one good match meaningless.
Yeah, it makes it impotent. And I think I said it with Mike. In fact, I know I said it with Mike on this show, and I think I've said it other places. Raw, especially 2 weeks ago, and obviously this past week as well, it's a show that's aimed at six-year-old children, at a time, and it airs at a time of the night that I would never let my six-year-old watch television, much less what the remnants are of professional wrestling, what their version of it is. They made Vince McMahon's teddy bear explode or whatever it was. They've had things where when things are going great, you can have some things like that and have them work because the greater parts of everything is in gear and is working. When it's not working, it just shows a bigger bright light on everything being poor. I mean, Paul Heyman at the end of that thing with CM Punk, yes, I'm happy about that. Yes, there was some good stuff on that show, but it was a show that my four-year-old wouldn't be interested in, even if I let him watch it.
Well, the thing is, you watch it probably the same reason I do, because you do shows and you review things, and honestly, it's almost like at the end of it, you think, Jesus, you mean I got to talk about this? And you know there's not a lot of positive to say. But anyway, the point I guess I'm really at, if you're just watching it as a casual viewer, are you going to watch it? I mean, can you anticipate, well, something better is coming up, so I'll hang on? Or do you not? I mean, I honestly don't know. I guess it was on the Observer site that somebody wrote a thing about if you didn't watch wrestling, this is how you'd look at, and they looked at it in that at Raw in that context along with last week's Impact and SmackDown. And I agreed. I thought, yeah, you can't win new audiences by insulting their intelligence or just giving them mindless nonsense that they themselves obviously aren't interested. I mean, the whole thing with Vicky and AJ, do you really care? I mean, the point is, where the hell is this going anyway? And you know, it really makes no. And then I don't know if Cisco or Ebert, whichever one said something. Well, you know, the crowd was real. Boys, the crowd paid $80 to see the friggin' thing. If they watch it on television, they realize that everybody else. It's audience participation. They're not necessarily into anything. They realize that this guy you chant this, and that guy you boo, and this guy you cheer. They're just getting their money's worth. I don't think it. And when I say that, I don't mean to be sarcastic or insulting, but it's just, I think that's what it is, Mike, is that the people that are there, we might as well get our money's worth out of this thing, so we'll get involved. And somebody in the back falsely takes that to think that, wow, we're getting over. I don't think so.
No, and I agree. And, I mean, of course, the Chicago crowd is good. The L.A. crowd is good, and they're good for certain people. L.A. with Randy Orton, obviously, Punk in Chicago. You know, some crowds are just like that, where they are over-the-top great, but they like hearing themselves, you know, on TV. They like seeing themselves on TV when they go home. They are just getting their money's worth. But, you know, what was their reaction when, you know, Layla and Miz were going at it while Caitlin and Eve were wrestling? You know, right on their hands. You know, where were they for a lot of that stuff when it wasn't time for the Pavlovian reaction to the Titantron or the music or a promo that was really good, where, you know, when you stop and you isolate just those pieces, you know, even though that crowd was rowdier than most, it's still, that's the biggest, you know, weakness that they have is people don't care. The wrestling fans are going to watch. That's
and
true,
you know,
but they're not drawing in.
For years, whether it was me or Gordon Solie or JR or Lance Russell or Cottle or whoever the hell it was, part of our job was to try to instill some reality or sense of caring into an audience. And then on SmackDown, the two girls are in the ring, and I don't remember which two because it's so insignificant, and the friggin' announcers say, well, you know, these two girls were arguing on Twitter last week. I thought, oh, my God, well, can I buy a pay-per-view and watch them argue on Twitter? Or is the next stipulation they're banned from using their phones? Or, I mean, who gives a shit? I don't know how else to say it.
That's, yeah.
I mean,
well,
it's just,
yeah,
it's
at
just
least
so
that would be
friggin'
insignificant. TNA, on the other foot, is not even announcing anything for a pay-per-view that's coming up this Sunday, which is why we're not even going to bother to talk about them.
Yeah, I know. It's you know.
Well,
you know, we did get to see Eric Young take his clothes off, and ODB Chuck her boobs up and down a few times. So, I mean, you know, and the crazy thing there is they have probably had the better wrestling overall, say, for the last month, I mean, in terms of quality matches. But their storylines are so stupid that again, they render the good matches insignificant, too.
I was telling Rich before we went on, I'm giving them the slightest, tiniest bit of rope because I have liked where they have been going, and I do have faith in what Bruce Pritchard seemingly is doing here and what other people there seemingly are doing. But they went too long with the Claire Lynch thing, and they got caught. They went too long, and they were completely surprised by Austin Aries, which obviously threw off Storm and Rude, which then led to, I think, more problems with Aces and Eights, which they are really, you know, looking at trouble there. But that's the only reason I'm giving them rope. If they can get out of this Aces and Eights thing with enough impact, okay, I'll give that to you. But they, I mean, they really, they were rolling well for a while, and they really smacked a wall.
Well, the Aces and Eight things, it's a dry well, because here's the thing. Over the years, when Whitey Caldwell and I did a mask. We did the Avengers to get because the rights to, cheated us out of the tag belts, and so they wouldn't give Les Thatcher and Whitey Caldwell another title match. So we came back as the Avengers. But the point was, I won't go through the whole storyline because it carried on for several months. But at the end was Les Thatcher and Whitey Caldwell took the mask off, and there was an impact of that. So when Billy Smith from the Texaco station takes the mask off, who gives a damn?
Yeah, I respect Wes Briscoe, but, you know, doesn't mean
but
a thing.
But Wes, you know, but it's got, I mean, I'm not throwing down on Wes Briscoe. I think he's a good young athlete. But the point is, how significant is he into that? I mean, has he established in that company? Has he been a world champion? Has he got an axe to grind with anybody there? I got all day to come up with a legitimate answer here, Mike.
Well, no, but you said it right. That leaves their only option, unless they're going to do something and waste a whole lot of money on somebody, because there's no one they can bring in to make an impact. You know, if they go, is it going to be Jeff Jarrett? At least Jeff Jarrett can carry a role, but again, it's going to be, I would think, all the air letting out of the room. And that, to me, he's the best option.
Well, sure. Well, yeah, somebody said Eric Bischoff. I said, God, I hope not. You know, who cares? But you know, that's the point. I mean, over the years, that's the whole thing. When, you know, and then when you see the babyface helping the heel put the mask back on so it doesn't lose it, that kind of takes the edge off the thing, too. Or the fact that, 3 weeks ago when Hogan baseball batted a couple of those guys, they took the mask off somebody who nobody knew who he was anyway, and then they had the opportunity to knock this guy down, and he didn't want to take the mask off him. So it's like, who cares? You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, they're trying to I don't know if they're trying to redo the NWO or what the hell they're trying to do, but I just don't think, you know, that the conclusion of it is going to really make a damn. Honestly.
Now, I do want to say, because we're not going to talk about Ring of Honor either, because the way I looked at this week, after watching Impact last Thursday, after I didn't see SmackDown, but after watching Raw this past Monday, you know what? I'm not going to let these promotions get my love of professional wrestling down. So later on, we're only going for an hour tonight, so later on we're going to be talking about some other names on the Hall of Fame list that we actually have not talked about, I don't think, in the past, but are some, you know, really interesting ones, but it just, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to let them get me down, but also next week, Brutal Bob Evans, speaking of people that, you know, are never down at any time, he's been teasing an announcement recently, which today he put up a YouTube posting, which you could go to his Facebook and see, where he's made an announcement that he's going to make an announcement next week on this show that will impact his career mightily and may get him in trouble with Ring of Honor. He doesn't know, and he doesn't even care. But he's going to have a pretty big announcement, which he has not told me or Rich Tate about. Did he tell you anything about this yet?
No, he said he was going to make an announcement. I thought he was just being funny. I don't mean to take anything away from my friend Bob, but I just thought he was, you know, being tongue-in-cheek. But, of course, TNA has made several impactful announcements over the years, too. Bob, if you're listening, I don't mean that, that you're going to hire Eric Bischoff as your personal manager or anything.
Oh, God.
Well, Ring of Honor might make an announcement that they're bringing wrestling back. Maybe they won't. I don't know. But
well, they got it's obviously they're in flux again right now. They have the TV tapings coming up September 22nd in Baltimore, and hopefully Bob doesn't do anything on the show next week that prevents him from being there. But then again, I don't know what this announcement's going to be. But
I don't know. I'll tell you what. While I was down in North Carolina, Mike, I had the opportunity to sit down with my dear friend Tommy Pritchard for just a little bit. I mean, I wish we had spent a whole day together, but just for half an hour. And then he mentioned this on one of his blogs here in the last couple of weeks too. The business is in trouble. I mean, the independents, he said to me, he said, my God, he said, I didn't realize how sad this was till I got out here. And I said, well, you're just scratching the surface. Now wait. It's just the industry itself. I had somebody say today, have you ever seen the business in such bad shape? And somebody else said, well, WWE makes a lot of money. I said, well, sure they do. But there's no buzz about this business. There is nobody. I mean, it's not water cooler. It's not, when I see somebody that knows I'm in the wrestling business, they don't say, man, did you see this last Monday or last Thursday or last Friday? They talk about the baseball or football or political conventions or something. I mean, wrestling is just part of the landscape, and it doesn't stand out right now. Jer, I don't know if you saw the interview or read the interview. I just saw excerpts from it. Jericho mentioned about him trying to put together a finish for three young guys that he worked with in WWE before he left, and I don't remember who exactly. I think Ziggler was one of the guys on the other team, but I don't remember who the other two were. It doesn't matter. Could have been anybody. But basically what he said was things that he took for granted, psychology, things that in the match that just, took for granted that made sense. They looked at him like, huh? They had no clue. And there is the problem. They don't have a clue. They don't get it. They haven't got it. And they may never get it because of the way that the whole thing is put together. And so you've got young athletes that aren't, again, while I was in California, I had somebody ask me, who on the WWE roster would you liken to Steve Austin or Chris Benoit or Eddie Guerrero or Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels? And it took me at least 2 seconds to think and say, nobody. Because you answer that question for me. Mike, is there anybody that can carry those guys' bags?
No, sir. No, and it's not, and again, not the fault of Kofi or Dolph or Ted DiBiase or anybody on that roster. Not their fault per se, but what they are given, how they are trained, what they are put out there to do, and what they are told by people that are not thinking in, they forget how they even got there in the first place. They have no stars. My concern, and I remember Dave Meltzer saying on this show when we talked to him, I worry about the Harlem Globetrotter effect. He said, well, they are already. They come to your town, they go, you buy the merchandise, and you go home. But I think about the Harlem Globetrotters as, in some areas they are big. But I also think of them at the high school. And I think of them as people not really caring when they come. And once you've seen it once, you've seen it a million times. And that's the greater concern I have with WWE of, yes, they're making a lot of money now and all of that sort of stuff. But even they, when people who are average fans aren't watching or are insulted by what they're watching or can at least blow holes in what they're watching, that's really bad. And the fact that they don't realize that and they rest on these big quarters and they rest on all of these millions of dollars and relying on USA, again, not good. But we're up against a break here, and we're only going to have two of these tonight. So we'll go to this one now and be back with actually happier and better topics than WWE because, again, I'm not letting these donkeys get me down when it comes to wrestling, and going to be talking with Les about, the goodness of the business and one of the good things with the interview a couple weeks ago with Buddy Wayne we did. So we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You've seen me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. There's enough food in this country to feed everyone. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They help spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them and make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
In 1977, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. The odds of that same boy winning the U.S. Open twice, 1 in 1.2 billion. The odds of him having a child diagnosed with autism, 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, joined by me, Mike Sempervivi, and I wanted to switch gears here because I didn't have a chance to talk to you after our interview with Buddy Wayne, and I had heard Buddy Wayne a zillion times with Brian Alvarez on the website. And
Before we get into that, Mike, let me touch on a couple of things while it's on my mind. I got two discs yesterday in the mail from Kayfabe Commentaries, from Sean at Kayfabe Commentaries. And they're both called Breaking Kayfabe. One is Sean Waltman, and the other one is New Jack. And, you know, it's not really about wrestling as such. It's about their life, how they grew up, their drug addiction, their this, that, you know. They're very interesting. They really are. I both these guys I know are kind of considered rebels or outlaws or whatever. I always had a good rapport with both of them, Anyway, I just wanted to mention that those are, I guess, available now on Kayfabe Commentary site, and they're both very much well worth the time to listen to because they're extremely interesting and give you some insight into both of these guys in terms of who they are and why they've done some of the things they've done. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get that in.
Oh, no problem. And, yeah, I think the tagline on that series is wrestlers are people, too. And, you know, actually, before I get to ask what I was going to ask you, when it comes to New Jack, because obviously there's been, you know, the Arcola stuff, the Gypsy Joe stuff, all the four justifiable homicides he talked about, all that sort of stuff, and, you know, people either love him or hate him, and you've always had a good rapport with him. What is it with him, or what do we miss with him for those people that only know the negative of Mr. Jerome Young?
Well, you know, he and I hit it off when he came into Smokey. I don't know why. I mean, you know, we just did, and we've always gotten along well. And he's actually, thanked me for helping him out some publicly a couple times. But, you know, on there, I didn't know this. By the time he was 15 years old, his mother had gone, I forget exactly where, to take a job, and he was living by himself in the house. I mean, he was raising himself. He was going to school, going to high school. He was passing everything, had all the numbers to graduate, but it was because of armed robbery that he ended up going to jail. Actually should have only been in jail for a year. But due to fighting in the jail, he got that sentence extended to two additional years. But, he was a product of the streets, basically. And, he says on this particular disc, he didn't like his mother then. He doesn't like his mother. And, I won't go into the whole thing. But, he was just a straight up guy, you know. I mean, he said, not unlike myself, said what was on his mind, and we obviously come from different backgrounds and everything, but he was always straight up with me. I never had I only think that if he felt you were trying to con him or trying to play him, then you were drawn to short straw. But then you
got
to realize,
you deserve
too,
what you got.
Huh?
I would say you probably deserve what you got.
Yeah, well, you realize the environment he grew up with on the streets of Atlanta, and the wrestling business is political and backstabbing, and, there's a lot of, but the entertainment business is, it's not just the wrestling business, but the entertainment business in general has a lot to do with that. So, he just assumed that it all played over, I think. You know, he played the part that he played. You know, when he came into smoking, he and Mustafa came into smoking, I remember the very first night that we did television, I think it was in a small town in North Carolina. I don't remember which one. I don't think we ever went back there to do TV again. But I honestly, I went to one of the police officers that I saw standing watching the show, and I said, it's up to you guys to be sure these guys get out of town tonight. I mean, that's the kind of heat that they had. And I'll tell you the reason I said it to this particular police officer, because I wanted to go on record of telling him it was his duty, because he was buying into the gimmick too.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because I heard him, you know, talking to, you know, overheard a part of his conversation, which told me, you know, that. And believe me, over the years, Mike, he wouldn't be the first cop that bought into a heel thing and was, you know, created,
no,
could
but,
create
but,
more of a problem than a solution.
But funny to think about this being in the 90s. You know, something, you know, we always hear the lore of the stories, especially in the, you know, in the 70s and into the 80s, but the 90s is what these guys were able to do. And I think that's where I think a lot of people disrespect what Cornette was able to do. But, you know, especially to me in that area, and you would know better than anybody, whether you like it or not, on the national level, they played to their crowd. They, whether you liked it, thought it was highbrow, lowbrow, they were playing the race, any of that stuff. They knew how to play the areas they were going into to draw legitimate heat, which is what it's always supposed to be about, drawing genuine emotion.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, well, you know, and he says on his DVD about having people spitting on him, and, you know, he said, this wasn't boo heat. This, well, I'm not going to use the N-word. This is, you know, we'll kill you, N-word type of heat, you know, and he's right, yeah, you know, and wow, that's, but it, you know, this disc is really interesting, and the one with Sean Waltman, very much so, too. You know, Sean is, like I say, I know it's supposed to be an outlaw or, you know, a rebel or whatever, and, you know, over the years, times that he and I would sit down, like in a WWE locker room and talk, he came to Cincinnati for a brief spell, he and Scott and Kevin, when they were getting ready to go up, you know, back to WWE, came to get the ring rust off and used worked out at our place for about a week. And but so I've sat with Sean. The funny thing with Sean is, as much as that may be his reputation or, you know, the public perception, he and I on several occasions talked about a mutual friend who we were both concerned with in terms of his own, you know, demons. And the funny thing is that Sean was usually the one that brought the conversation up and said, you know, don't you worry about so-and-so. And I'd say, yeah. And he said, you know, so do I. I really wish, you know, we could reach out and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, here's a guy who's really, well, you know, got some sensitivity to him, and just, you know, that's not the public perception. So both these discs, I think, are very much well worth the time to watch, and you'll get a different feel for both these individuals.
We'll put that up at the ringsiderap.com website as well, too. You know, I was going to ask you about Buddy Wayne, and I, you know, that's the last show I think we did together was the interview with him, and I went back and I've listened to it twice. I love that show just because you and Buddy talking about taking the exact same routes and seeing the exact same things up in the Maritimes, you know, over, you know, a difference of 20 years or 25 years, whatever it was, but you guys still saw the same things and did the same things, and the realization that you guys were doing that, I thought it was, I mean, not to sound overly sentimental or what's the issue, but I thought that was actually a really special thing. What was it? What is that like for you when you talk to a guy you've never talked to before, you've only heard about, you know of each other and you know of each other's stories, but to hear that, it's amazing that you travel those same paths almost, you know, footstep by footstep in the same exact places.
Well, you know, I think, Mike, what you felt there, and I never really stopped thinking of it. We just kind of bonded, and I think that's due to our mutual respect for the business, the way we were brought up in the business, and our love and continued respect for the business and love for it. And I think that's a type of thing. You know, when you went to territories, well, you know, when we had J.J. Dillon on, Jim and I have been friends for 44 years. When he came to the Carolinas initially, you know, he was told a mutual friend, I don't remember who it was, said, look up Les Thatcher, and, you know, he'll see that you find the right place to live and get you hooked in. And Jim and I instantly bonded the same, you know, with most of my tag team partners. It was now to say that you got along with everybody would be crazy, because obviously that's, you know, no, I don't know that anybody gets along with everybody. But there's an unspoken camaraderie bond and honestly, you know, it was like with Bob Evans. I fall into the same thing with him. It's that's something that's lost. It really is. And I think in part because you don't have the road, you know, to spend that time on. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. These guys, you know, you fly into the airport, you rent a car, you get to the building, go to the hotel, and so forth. But you really, you know, don't spend all your time or as much time together. It's, you don't have the freedom, you know. It's like Road Dogg, Brian Armstrong. You know, he would have fit in beautifully 40 years ago, and probably today, he gets to work, but behind the scenes. But there were so many guys that were entertaining in the locker room, but were free spirits years ago. They couldn't get a job today, not because they couldn't work or not because they were actually bad people. It's because they don't play the game. You know, and that's one of the things that Sean Wallen mentions on this Breaking Kayfabe thing, is playing the game. And, New Jack also mentioned he's not – I thought, boy, there's one of the reasons I think we bonded. Never thought about it until I heard him – you know, he said, I don't know how to play the game. I don't understand the politics, and I don't either. I mean, I understand it. I just not interested, you know.
It's amazing when you look at guys who would never get a shot, Hanson and Brody and the Williams and the Watts, the guys like that who, yeah, they those guys wouldn't be able to do it today because for those reasons, and it's ridiculous.
Sure. Well, you know, it's the corporate structure has taken a lot of the life out of the world to begin with, if you really stop to think about it, you know, because how many people in that tower in Stanford have power to get you fired or to cut your pay or to see that you're not handled properly, and you don't even know those people. And maybe have never even spoken directly to those people, and yet they have that kind of power. But they never have to confront you with it, and never have to face you. You know, I don't know. You know, and that's the other thing too. If we're just talking about the wrestling business, back in the day when there was a booker and a promoter, you didn't get your notice by email. Or by mail, or if you got it, I mean, if you got a notice, or nobody, you didn't get a letter saying maybe it's time for you to find another territory because we've kind of, you know, we need to give you a rest out here for a while. Somebody actually had to face you and look you in the eye and tell you about it.
Oh, and that's what a novel concept.
Yeah, isn't it? But I mean, you find that in just, you know, in the whole American thing now, right? I mean, corporate America is, it's never having, you know, what's the old thing about never having to say you're sorry, or it's about never having to face anybody.
I had people, you know, just as an example of that, I had an employee this year quit via text message. It's like, you know, what kind of coward are you? You know, it just, I don't know. But this, well, actually, we should go to break here, too, since we're at the 8:40 mark, and we got 20 more minutes to go, so we'll knock this break out of the way and be back talking about this here on Ringside Wrap.
Nancy O'Dell here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, then it becomes everybody's business. So please plan ahead. Call a cab or designate a driver before the party starts. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who wasn't under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere. On the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything, at a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil, and Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child, and that can last a lifetime. Start something today at BigBrothersBigSisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and into our last segment here this evening. And just to let you know, again, Bob Evans with his announcement next week on this program that will be career-shattering for him, possibly. So we'll see about that. No Peach Day Pandemonium tomorrow night, so give your ears a rest there from those guys, or go back in the archives, because they always do good shows as well, too. Les, in this segment here, obviously the Hall of Fame is coming up here as far as the time to get the ballots in. I believe it's September 15th for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And, you know, obviously every year we always talk about the Andersons, and we've talked about the Assassins and the Von Bronners and some people. You know, the obvious ones that we believe should go in, but don't seem to make it, so we end up talking about them every year. But I actually wanted to talk about a couple of other guys on the list, including a couple of new people that got put on the list. And, you know, talking about Rebels before, it's there was a triumvirate of guys in the 70s that banded together and went from promotion to promotion. And not that they held the promoters up for money or anything like that, but they were a little union. And that union was Superstar Billy Graham, the Big Cat Ernie Ladd, and Ivan Koloff. And Ivan Koloff is a guy who did not get a lot of support, I guess, years ago, but it seemingly, as the years have gone on, people have started to appreciate him more. Where do you stand on Ivan Koloff as far as being a Hall of Famer?
Ivan, I had the opportunity to work with Ivan in the Carolinas, and, you know, he was... Well, you know, he was the WWF champion at one time. As far as I know, Red is, you know, has drawn money every place he's gone. And which, you know, I don't think that's the only criteria either. You know, when I look at this, you want me to be honest, I don't read Dave's outline of how you should vote for people. You know, because yeah. I think there's guys that have maybe never drawn a lot of money in a lot of places that still have contributed tremendous amount to the business, and maybe just as far as, I mean, you know, the business itself is concerned. And, you know, yeah, so I think Ivan's worthy. I honestly do. You know, he's done a lot. He's done a lot in the business, and he has been a top guy in as far as I shouldn't say virtually every territory he's been in, because obviously when he first started out, that probably wasn't the case, or it wasn't with most everybody. But I would say he's a valid candidate without question.
I believe that as well. And another guy who I think, because of how he was portrayed in the 90s and in the Attitude Era, and I think there were some bad feelings after his comeback with Hulk Hogan, but Sergeant Slaughter is another one who I think people are looking at his career with new eyes, and they look at him in starting out in the AWA and the, being one of the super destroyer marks, what he did in the Carolinas. With Don Kernoodle against Steamboat and Youngblood, the impact he had when he first went to the WWF, and his stints there as far as being hated, and his, you know, going up against Backlund, and then the turn he had with the Iron Sheik, and how impactful those matches were. Sergeant Slaughter, who, you know, if you take a guy who everyone knows his name, you know, and there's the fame part of the Hall of Fame, and you know, everything that goes along with that, where would you put Bob Slaughter?
Well, you know, wow, because I really don't know that much about Bob, but you know, again, the way you just laid it out, I would say that, that he's a worthy candidate as well. You know, here's the thing with our business. With baseball, you look at a guy's batting average, his RBI production, how many hits he got, or his won and loss record, or his ERA if he's a pitcher. You know, in football, has he won a Super Bowl? If he were a quarterback, what's his passing percentage, completion percentage, or wide receiver, how many catches, how many yards, running back yards, so forth, so on. We don't have anything like that, and like I said earlier, you know, one of the things, there have been a lot of very talented performers that just didn't get pushed every place they went. Or, you know, we were talking about the politics earlier that just didn't play into that, so they weren't, you know, pushed out in front yet. And there were some guys who weren't tremendous performers that, you know, they got that kind of push and got over for what, you know, but being in the right place at the right time. So it's just more difficult in this business, Mike, I think, to, you know, to make that evaluation. And, Missy Hyatt and I were kind of emailing back and forth about that, too. And I mentioned the Assassins and the Andersons, and she said, yeah, she mentioned the Assassins and the Andersons. And you know, there's something, too, that the Andersons only work two territories. Who gives it? You know what?
Yeah.
If you could make that kind of money and didn't have to pack your family up and move all over the frigging country, why would you not do that? I mean, so are they to be slapped on the wrist or to be chastised because they didn't work in 50 territories? And yet, on the other hand, I've worked with the Assassins in the Arizona territory, in the Atlanta territory, in the Charlotte territory. They drew money in the Florida territory. So please, somebody, they were, both these teams could get heat, could draw money. They were all four good workers, had great psychology, and they could promo. So what am I missing here? Oh, I know. Somebody who didn't ever see them work or doesn't understand the business is voting. Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one where I remember, I'm just going to, tag teams are woefully underrepresented in this. Woefully. Now, there's a ton of guys who have teamed together who are in that went in separately, like you have Bockwinkel and Stevens and Patterson and Stevens and Bruiser and Crusher. But here are the tag teams that are in: the Busick Family Riot Squad, the Fabulous Kangaroos, the Road Warriors, the Midnight Express, and the Fabulous Freebirds. I'm just going to throw out some names, and I'm just doing this rhetorically just to show how woefully underrepresented tag teams are, because there's one I'm going to bring up, and I'm not sure how much you know about them, which is the Sharp Brothers. But the Sharp Brothers, Johnny Barron and Buddy Rogers, Lewin and Curtis, the Torreses, the Bastines, the Von Grauners, Bastine and Lions, the Sharps, the Rock and Roll Express, Skull Murphy, Brute Bernard, the Scots, Weaver and Becker, Hawk and Hansen, none of these tag teams, none of them, and very few of those men are in the Hall of Fame. It's incredibly woefully underrepresented. And a couple of years ago, I asked Dave Meltzer why the Sharp Brothers, who, if you watch Japanese wrestling, why they're not in the Hall of Fame, because to me they would be. It surprised me because if you hear about their match with Ricky Dozen and now I'm brain locking on who the other guy was, that match was shown in schools as, you know, as Japanese history.
Right.
The ratings that match got, and I've done a lot of research on them over the last few years, and it's not easy. I know a lot of people think that San Francisco began with Roy Shire, but it was Joe Malkiewicz. And you know, looking back at their history, the Sharps were very influential, and yes, Leo Nomolini was the only guy, I guess, really who drew in San Francisco. That's true. But tag teams in that era, except for the Carolinas, they were used for riots. They were used to get heat. They were, again, I think their form is disrespected in history, and how they're looked at is disrespected because they were very influential. And I think this hurts Enrique Torres, too, who, you know, ties into this because he wrestled the Sharps in different combinations in San Francisco and in Central States, which, again, a lot of people don't know that area and don't know that history, where Bob Geigel and Bob Orton Sr. and many of those guys spoke very highly of the Sharp Brothers. So even though we don't have tons of footage outside of the Japanese stuff, the people that they worked with seem to respect them, where it surprises me that they're not in and they're on the ballot for the first time. Les, do you know a whole lot or really anything at all about the Sharps?
Well, because, you know, as a kid growing up as a fan, I remember reading a lot about the Sharps, you know. And the only Sharp I ever met was Ben. He was in Calgary when I was up there in 62. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. They drew money. They were, you know, and that's the and that's the thing too. And I think, and I would think due to age, and I don't know because I don't know everybody that votes on this thing, Mike. But I would think a lot of these people only know what they read in the Observer. And so if, you know, if what they read in the Observer isn't something sterling, which is not to say Dave's down these people because he can only write what he knows. But
and you can only write
Brian
so much about
what,
people.
Huh?
And you can only write so much about people.
Well, sure. So, you know, but I think, you know, obviously somebody my age is going to know more in terms of that. Well, it was like for, you know, years it was a talk of Bill Miller, for Christ's sake. He drew as Bill Miller. He drew as Dr. X. He, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Who's Bill Miller? You don't know. Okay, well, you know, but, you know, that the crazy thing about that, too, is those of us who teach this business will tell you that some, you know, if you mention Rogers and O'Connor at 61 in Chicago, some kid will look at you like, huh? You mean Hogan and Warrior? No, I mean actually two people that actually know how to work, and that was, you know. But I mean, there's a sad thing about our business too. Some kids' education comes from Warrior and Hogan, opposed to Rogers and O'Connor or Briscoe and Funk, or you know what I mean. And so that's mentioned earlier that the education. You know, that WWE is, to so many young people, that is wrestling. It's not, but to them it is, you know. So I think therein lies part of the problem. But, yeah, there's a lot of these people that, you know, whether they go in a Hall of Fame, but some sort of national recognition. There, like I said earlier, there are guys who have contributed tremendously to this business in more than one way. That deserve that honor and will probably never get it. But, you know, there is no real hard lines, you know, or criteria. I know
it always hurts. It always hurts Dick Murdoch and always hurts, you know, Bob Armstrong isn't even on the ballot, but that's one of those things too, where if you talk to a worker, to a person, they say, yeah, when Murdoch was on, there was nobody better, and for everything that he could do and, you know, the things that he was instrumental in and angles and money and things like that, you know, no matter where he went. And the same Bob Armstrong, for anybody he touched, where was there a better promo guy? Was there, you know, was there a better, you know, fired up real man baby face for his territory? No, and he's hurt, and he's the ultimate to me is being hurt by the guy that, you know, at least the Andersons get mentions. At least Ole gets a mention. Bob Armstrong doesn't get one, and that's, you know, shell shock.
Well, you know, you've heard me talk about Leo Garibaldi as such a tremendous booker, and he was in more than one territory, as well as he and his dad were a hot father-son tag team. Leo was a hell of a baby face. He, you know, when he was young on the West Coast, and of course I was just a kid then too, but in talking to some of the old timers and stuff, Leo was to the young ladies then what Cena, you know, is to the young ladies now, and got over like $1 million. But now here's a guy who has shaped the psychology of so many of us in the industry. Plus, realize that little territory of Atlanta that you mentioned, the Torres's, but what kind of money did he make with the, how he kept the Andersons hot, he kept the Torres's hot, he made Tim Woods, he made Mr. Wrestling, he made wrestling too. Those guys would have never had the impact on the industry if it hadn't have been for Leo. Is Leo in the Hall of Fame?
No, he is not.
Does anybody mention him?
Not me.
You know, right? But I mean, now, you know, so here's a guy who has, as a wrestler, as a booker, as a guy who has, you know, shaped the mental capacities in terms of psychology and stuff for many of us, I know Kevin Sullivan, who booked Atlanta during the war, was a Leo Garibaldi disciple. Frankie Kane, who was a hell of a heel and was a Leo Garibaldi disciple. What does this guy deserve? He deserves accolades. He legitimately deserves accolades and will never receive them, because the only people that trumpet that, and the other part of that is Dave is even too young to even think about Leo Garibaldi and his dad, or have ever, now I can't say, he may have seen some old, scratchy videos or some, films or something, but to have worked with Leo is to know, the value of what he had mentally and what he gave to this business. And like I say, all these cool writers for these companies today, you put any one of those in the Atlanta territory and say, okay, keep the seats filled in Augusta and Macon and so forth and so on. My friend, they don't have a friggin' clue. Believe me, they don't have a. Santino getting a hard on with his hand, it won't cut it.
No, God, no. And oh God, that's. Yeah, we're gonna let that end the show. The Santino, the show killer, right there.
Let me plug a couple dates here, if you don't mind. Okay.
Of course.
All right. Now, after we finish up with Bob and his monumental announcement next Wednesday, I'm headed the next day to Edmonton, Alberta. And we're doing a camp up there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, September 14th, 15th, 16th. And as I understand it, we've got guys coming from Vancouver and Winnipeg, which I'm excited about. And Vance says there are a couple spots still open. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in jumping on board, you can email cnwawrestling@hotmail.ca. And also emailing back and forth with my friend Lance Storm. I think he's going to come up and say hello and maybe have dinner with us or lunch or something and hang out one of those days. And Saturday, Sunday, October 13th and 14th, Blue Ridge, Georgia, NWA Deep South Championship Wrestling Arena. And to sign up for info there, I talked to Woody there yesterday. I think we got about 25 guys on board. You can email dscwrestling@yahoo.com or call Woody himself at 706-889-1803. And I know we got Kyle Matthews going on board and Sean Tempers, and I'm not sure, Vordell Walker, I think, is going to make it. Anyway, also about these 2 days, let me mention, Mike, that David Jackson, who is the man behind Wrestling Cares, by the way, that website is up for the L.A. promotion, wrestlingcares.com, so you can kind of check out a little what we're doing. David is going to make both of these events with me, and we're hoping to come away from both of them with some talent that we will be able to sign for a tournament next year. And then November 24th, 25th, I'm back in Waynesville, North Carolina for Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling, and they could email kcthunder@gmail.com there. That's the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday following Thanksgiving. So I'm going to keep busy.
I can tell, and I'm looking at the Wrestling Cares website right now with you in that picture with everybody around there, the School of Hard Knocks there. So I'm going to look at that as soon as we get off of here, and everybody knows what I'm doing. And by the way, folks, if you listen to Wrestling Observer Live on Sundays, 6 to 8 Eastern Time, and you listen to it on Sirius or XM, it is now football season. Thank God for that. And by the way, Mike Mooneyham, mea culpa here being a Auburn Tiger fan, and kudos to Clemson, even though I still swear nobody deserved to win that game on Saturday night. But because of the NFL, the 4 o'clock games, a lot of time we're blacked out or you don't get a chance to hear it. So I suggest anybody out there, go through the website itself or go through TuneIn, either the radio app or the website, TuneIn.com. The app itself is fantastic, and they've got a history of the shows in the whole 9 yards there as well, too. So well worth the 99 cents or whatever it is for the pro version. There's a free one as well, too. So Brian and I, and sure, Adam and I are going to be doing a show again real soon, too. So Les, again, thanks for coming back, and we're thanks for returning here. And I've lost the ability to speak here at the end of the night. So,
well, I enjoy your company, Michael, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week again.
And you got me all tied up here. Bob Evans, this better be good, buddy. We'll see you next week.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.